Welcome back to the show. I'm Lisa Garr, sitting in for Art Bell. You're listening to Coast AM. Don't forget to join George Norrie tomorrow night, also sitting in for Art. His guest is William Thomas. And William is an award-winning investigative journalist specializing in health, the environment, and military affairs. He's honing his craft on the streets of Milwaukee, Chicago, and Woodstock during the 60s. He reported for the Environment News Service while serving as a member of a three-man environmental emergency response team during and immediately following the Gulf War. He later broke the chemtrail story worldwide with the ENS. So don't forget to join George Norrie tomorrow with guest William Thomas on Coast to Coast. Welcome back. And if you are feeling that there is, if you have a sense that we are connected in some way, this might explain why when you're thinking of someone, they call, or this could possibly even explain women's intuition, or it gets you out of that feeling of being lonely, if anything. And we're finding that there is scientific evidence that we are connected by the quantum particles in our bodies that travel through time in a nonlinear way. Greg Braden is my guest. He's a quantum physicist as well as a geologist. He was actually the technical operations manager for Cisco Systems. And what we're talking about is fascinating for someone who had that type of background, because we're talking about what the scientific community is discovering about actual proof there is more than that meets the eye about human connectivity. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Lisa Garr, sitting in for Art Bell, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Lisa Garr, sitting in for Art Bell this evening. If you just joined us, my guest is quantum physicist Greg Braden, who's been talking about Western science being good, but in a way incomplete, where there is an underlying field of human energy that exists that is being proven scientifically. And for the break, Greg was talking about some of these studies that proves this non-locality of evidence that we are actually connected in some way. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Well, Lisa, it's good to be back. And, you know, I was just thinking over the break, we've got a couple more experiments I'd like to share, but
yes.
What we're actually exploring right now, I mean, it's the crux of where science and spirituality come together, and how we see our relationship and our role to the universe around us. And there have been two schools of thought that have emerged over the last 120 years. One of those schools of thought, Albert Einstein believed in very strongly, and that suggests that the universe has been here for a long time, much longer than we have, and that we're relatively latecomers passing through as casual observers a brief moment in time in creation. So Albert Einstein said, you know, we have the ability to explore a little bit of the universe, but we really don't have much impact or much effect on the universe around us. That's one school of thought. A colleague of Einstein's, who's still alive, still with us today, still at Princeton University, his name is Dr. John Wheeler, says something that is completely opposite, 180 degrees different. What he says is that it is the act of consciousness that actually creates the building blocks that the universe is made of. He says, I can't imagine a universe that exists without us, because it's the act of us observing the world around us that is creating, allowing us to create as we go, in what he calls a participatory universe. And I love that term, because what he's saying is, in essence, he's saying we may never find the edge of our universe as we're looking to define what this universe looks like. We may never find the smallest particle in the quantum world to see what this stuff is that we're made out of. And the reason is because everywhere we look, everywhere that consciousness explores with the expectation that something will be there, that exploration, that act of looking, observation, is the act that creates something for us to see, that we are actually building this universe as we go. And what I think is we're finding is we're somewhere between those two, those two viewpoints. And these experiments, I think that that we're sharing tonight, and I just like to reiterate, these are representative experiments. There are others, many others that are happening, but I've chosen these representative experiments because they were done in scientific institutions. They were done under strict laboratory control.
And that does help to know.
Well, it does. And again, if we were having this conversation in the highlands of central China in Tibet, the listeners wouldn't necessarily need to know about the studies and the experiments, but we're Westerners and we have scientific minds, and this is the language we trust to tell us who we are in the world.
It does. It really actually does support the conversation for me, too, because you can speculate until the cows come home. You can talk about this with your friends, but when you find scientific evidence that we don't stop at our skin, that intrigues me. And I think that it intrigues most people because there's a sense that exists, and there's a sense that we are connected in some way, but there's no real way to tell unless people conduct these types of experiments. Now,
precisely.
Tell my favorite one about the saliva.
You like that saliva experiment.
I do. I love it.
This is an experiment that's conducted by the United States military in the early 1990s. The Intelligence and Security Command, INSCOM, INSCOM is the acronym that was used to describe this experiment. And again, it was the experiment is interesting, Lisa, but what was really interesting to me is the thinking underlying the experiment. When scientists begin to investigate the kinds of things we're talking about, you know something big is on the horizon because these experiments are demonstrating principles that Western science says can't happen. So this particular experiment, what they did, military scientists, the Army, they took some DNA from the mouth and the saliva of, well, the documentation calls it a donor. But when I talk about military experiments, I like to use the word volunteer. So,
okay.
So we'll call this a volunteer.
All right, good.
And so they take some, they're called leukocytes, white blood cells, a swab of tissue from the mouth of a volunteer in one room of a building, and they put that tissue and that DNA in a machine that can measure its changes in another room of the same building. And what they're doing is they're measuring the DNA's changes in one room while the person the DNA is connected to is watching very graphic video clips in another room. And those video clips are eliciting genuine states of emotion. These can't be faked. So these are wartime video, erotic video, humorous video, the kinds of things that elicit genuine states of emotion. And to make a long story really brief, what they found was when the volunteer was having his emotional peaks and valleys in one room, his DNA in another room was responding in the same instant in time. There was no lag time between the two, and there's nothing in conventional science that would explain why the DNA, I mean, our belief is once that DNA has left our body, once it's no longer attached, that, you know, it dies eventually, right? Attached. So what they're finding, and they began these experiments separated by hundreds of feet in the same building. They were continued when they shipped the DNA to other cities, and they used the atomic clocks in Boulder, Colorado, to gauge the response time. Because the conventional thinking, Lisa, is that for something like this to happen, when the volunteer's having an emotion, that he's sending a signal of some kind, and that signal is traversing these long distances, and it's reaching the DNA. And for that to happen, there would have to be some amount of time between the DNA's response and the emotion. And what the atomic clock showed is there was no lag time. It was instantaneous. The instant the donor is having his emotion, whether he's in the same building or whether he's separated. One of the experiments was done in Los Angeles with the donor, and the DNA was in Phoenix, Arizona.
Now,
separated by hundreds of miles, there's no lag time. It means there's something happening that Western science has yet to account for, and we're going to explain what that is because that's the key to everything we're talking about.
Now, when you said that the DNA was affected, in what way? Did the cells duplicate? Did they?
No, they didn't duplicate. They were able to actually see. It was a device that could measure the DNA optically. It could measure it chemically. They were using a spectroscope. They were measuring it electrically, and they were measuring it optically. And other researchers, for example, at the Institute of Heart Math in Northern California. We can talk about them as well. They've done the same kinds of experiments at the HeartMath Institute, where they have found that very precise kinds of human emotion, what are called coherent emotions in our heart, are affecting the way the DNA is wound, that double helix, whether it's wound tightly or loosely, in the DNA that is in the glass tube on the other side of the room. And there's nothing in Western science that really describes why this could happen. And the reason I'm sharing these experiments, now that we're talking about all of these, we can put these all together.
Mm-hmm.
First experiment, the University of Geneva in Switzerland, it's showing that particles are connected whether they are physically together or whether they're separated by miles. Energetically, they're still connected by a field of energy. We're only beginning to understand, number one. The Poponian experiment, where human DNA was affecting those particles, it was showing that human DNA is affecting the stuff our world is made of. These experiments from the HeartMath Institute, for example, are showing that human emotion is changing the DNA that is affecting the world around us. And the military experiments are showing, whether it's in the same room or 400 miles or 300 miles separate between Los Angeles and Phoenix, Arizona, the effect is the same. It doesn't make any difference how far apart you are. The effect is instantaneous. When you put all these together, they begin to tell a story, and it's the story of who we are that has been preserved in ancient wisdom and traditions, and that we had until they were edited from our text about 1,700 years ago. And what it says is that we can create very precise feelings inside of our bodies that directly affect the world around us, whether we're talking about creating rain in the deserts of New Mexico, or whether we're talking about healing a cancer in a body, or we're talking about creating peace in the Middle East during the Lebanese-Israeli War. All of those things have been documented, and they appear miraculous until we understand the mechanism. Once we understand the mechanism, Lisa, they're no longer miracles. It's a technology, and it's a technology, although we do not fully understand it. We can use what we do know, and we can create a better world. We can become better people, I believe.
Right, but is there a propensity for this to go wrong?
In what way?
If the intentionality is mixed, if many different people, they actually have done this on, mm-hmm. on Coast to Coast,
yeah.
Many different people had the same type of intentionality, but it was mixed and created an unfavorable response. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Well, I have. And the reason I ask you that question, I wanted to be really clear before I answer this, because the way it comes to me often is, can this be misused?
Uh-huh.
Is the question. And here's the answer. The answer is that the individual or individuals who are creating these effects will experience within their bodies and their lives what it is that they're creating before it ever goes and has an effect in the world around them. And it makes sense that it would happen that way because it's beginning in, when this is done properly, it begins in our hearts. So life-affirming principles perpetuate life. Life-denying principles are contractive, and they steal that life from our bodies. So those individuals who are essentially wishing bad things on other people, they experience those bad things.
On themselves?
In their lives and in their bodies, their body chemistry. For example, we know that for every feeling we create in our bodies, there's a chemistry that matches that. The hormones change in response to these feelings. Life-affirming or life-denying hormones.
How do you know this?
It can be measured, and it's been done at the HeartMath Institute in Northern California. We document this on the website. Have done studies, for example, feelings of love, appreciation, gratitude, create DHEA level increases in our bodies. That's the precursor to all the hormones in our body, the youth hormone, of over 100% in a six-hour period of time. And the stress hormone, cortisol, decreases about 23% in that same period of time in the presence of what we would call positive emotions. So in that instance, in those studies, those who are creating those positive emotions, life-affirming emotions, they experience that life-affirmedness, if you will. And by the same token, those who are creating the feelings of anger, hate, rage, revenge, inside their bodies. Their chemistry responds to that as well. Their cortisol levels increase, DHEA levels decrease, immune response decreases. And all, you know, all this has been documented in the open literature. And again, we talk about this in the books. We've talked about in this program. It's on the website. But the answer is that the person creating the effect will experience that effect before it ever goes anywhere beyond that. And it's almost like a fail-safe in some respects.
You were talking earlier in the show about the Israeli-Lebanon war and the group
yes.
of researchers. I don't think I'd let you finish that one. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about the
Well, Lisa, this is how good this field that connects us together is working tonight, because during the break, that was the note that I wrote down.
Oh, great.
To come back to, and it's perfect that we did it the way we did it. We began the conversation, we introduced it, we shared the experiments. Now we can go back and talk about that experiment, the healing of cancers, or the creating of rain, peace between nations, all these things.
Very exciting, yes.
Yeah, in early 1980s. Now, these are practical applications to the esoteric traditions and what the science has found, and that's why I think this is so important. The early 1980s, there was a war between Israel and Lebanon, the Israeli-Lebanese war. Researchers who understood these relationships, now, they didn't understand precisely why these things are working. They simply said, we know that these things work. People were trained to use this language that speaks to the field. They were trained to feel what are called coherent emotions of peace in their hearts. They weren't thinking them in their minds. They were trained to feel these feelings in their hearts, and they were placed in the war-torn area in the Middle East. And it agreed upon periods of time for what was called the prayer window. That window of time, they would feel the feelings as if peace had already happened in the Middle East. And when they would do that during that period of time, terrorist activities dropped to zero. They stopped. Crimes against people declined. Emergency hospital room visits declined. All these things we measured. Traffic accidents declined. And when they stopped these feelings, those statistics reversed. And people said, well, you know, maybe it's because of the full moon, or maybe it was a holiday, or maybe it was a weekend. And they did this again and again, different times of the day, different days of the week, different days of the month. And this was all published in a very famous study. It was the ORME, O-R-M-E, Johnson, Alexander, Davies, Chandler, Larimore study that was titled The International Peace Project in the Middle East. People would like to read about this. It was published in the Journal of Conflict Resolution, volume 32, number 4, December 1988.
Now, when they stopped the experiment, did the statistics have a backlash?
They did. They reversed. And this is actually the crux of how it's telling us how this field works. People said, well, if this effect is so powerful, why does it stop when the people stop what they're doing? Whether we call it prayer, we call it meditation, whatever word you want to use, they were feeling the feelings as if peace had already happened. And during those feelings, when that was happening, all that could happen was peace. This is what we found when we worked with the World Puja prayers, where hundreds of thousands of people felt peace in 1998, documented on the Princeton University sites. When people stopped doing that, those statistics reversed in major cities as well. So people say, well, if this is so powerful, why doesn't it last? And here's the answer.
That's,
this is the crux.
That's what I want to come back and talk to you about, is if it is so powerful, why doesn't it last?
Oh, a cliffhanger. Okay.
A cliffhanger. Absolutely. And what we can do about that. All right. So we will be right back. I'm Lisa Garr. I'm sitting in for Art Bell. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. That was a blast to the past. You know, that music helps, though. I do an afternoon show in the middle of the day, and doing nighttime is different for me. Now, Art's going to be turning around and doing the afternoon version. It's going to be in the afternoon where he's going to be in Manila. And so we're flipping tables here a little bit now. So I like the music. Thanks a lot. All right. So welcome back to Coast. I am Lisa Garcia, sitting in for Art Bell, as you just heard. And we're talking with quantum physicist Greg Braden about how, in a sense, Western science is good, but it's incomplete in many ways. There is an underlying field of human energy that exists that we don't stop at our skin. But if these types of studies that Greg Braden has been talking about human connectivity and cells operating in two different places in a non-local format, and how cells are affected in one place and another place at the same exact time with the same exact motion and activity. What does it mean? Why does all of this mean to us? Why doesn't it last? So we are going to come back and answer those questions for you. We are also going to be taking your calls a little bit later on in the show, so stand by for those phone numbers. And we will be right back. I'm Lisa Garr. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. I'm Lisa Garr, sitting in for Art Bell, and you're listening to Coast AM. If you just joined us, I've been speaking with Greg Braden, quantum physicist, and we're talking about what the scientific community is discovering about actual proof that there is more than meets the eye about human connection. And if this is true, and if these experiments that Greg's been talking about are true, why doesn't it last? Why doesn't it last when a group of people set the intention for rain or a reduction of violence or decrease in terrorist activities? Why doesn't it last, Greg?
Well, this is the very crux of everything that we're doing tonight, Lisa. This field of energy, we could spend another 4 hours talking about. It's
about
so
the studies,
new.
About the scientific studies?
Sure, yeah.
Amazing.
It's so new that scientists haven't even agreed upon a name for this field yet. Some are calling it a very technical name, the quantum hologram. We haven't even talked about the holographic part of this
right,
yet.
Right, I wanted to talk
some,
about them.
Yeah, some are calling it simply the mind of God. Some are calling it the field. Some now are calling it the divine matrix, based on what the father of quantum physics, Max Planck, stated back in the early part of the 20th century. But regardless of what we call it, we know this field, three things about this field. Number one, this field is what provides the container for our entire universe. If you ever wonder what it is that everything is happening within, it's within the context of this field. Number one, it's a container. Number two, it's a bridge between what happens inside of our bodies and the world around us. If you wonder how thoughts, feelings, emotions, and prayers and good wishes make a difference for someone half a world away, it's this field that is essentially the conduit. And number three, and this is going to be the answer to our question, is the field provides a mirror. It mirrors in the world around us, in our reality around us, what it is that we create in our imagination of thought, feeling, and emotion and prayer when we use these techniques. So it is a mirror of what we have become in that moment. It's a mirror of the peace or of the anger. And people know this. If you go to work angry, you're going to draw every angry person in your office is going to cross your path, mirroring that right back to you throughout the day. You'll see it on the freeway when you're trying to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a mirror. And with that in mind, we go back to these experiments that were happening, such as the International Peace Project in the Middle East. When the people stopped their prayers or their feelings of peace, all the statistics reversed, and the terrorist activities started again. The crimes against people increased back to the levels where they were. And they said, well, what happened? Well, this is the key, is that the language that speaks to this field, it's not about what we do in the moment. It's about what we become in our lives. This field is constantly mirroring what we are in our lives.
And who we are being?
What we are being, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And if the prayer only lasts for 20 minutes or a half hour, and then we stop that feeling of peace, it makes perfect sense that the field would stop mirroring that peace back to us. It invites us to become in our lives the very things that we'd like to see in our world. If we'd like to have love, compassion, nurturing relationships in our families, in our homes, we've got to give the field something to work with. If we want peace in our world, this shows, and I think it expresses why it's so difficult for angry people to create peace between nations. It's a very subtle principle of how this field works.
Because it's reflecting now, the anger of the people in the nations?
Precisely. Or individuals that collectively become, or the people making the policies, for that matter. What it says is there is no them and us. There is a we. So we can no longer say they're doing this or why are they doing this. We're all linked through the same field, Lisa.
You're saying that I am responsible for terrorism?
I'm not saying you're responsible. I'm saying that you are given the power to participate in creating peace in the world. And if we all believe that we are powerless to sit by and just wait and see what happens, that's precisely what we're doing. We're waiting to see what happens. But if we recognize that we're part of this field, we're all part of this field. People making decisions are just as much part of the field as those who are feeling the effects of that field. And the experiments are showing that as individuals and collectively, when we choose to create peace or we choose to create healing. Now, I mean, I've seen this happen. We show this documentation in live programs. We can see inside the body of a living woman who has what Western doctors have called an inoperable cancer. We can look through an ultrasound while practitioners standing near her are simply creating the feelings in their bodies as if this woman is already healed. And in less than 3 minutes, her body responds to that. The reality changes and that cancer disappears. And the Western medicine, that it's such a disconnect from the way we think about our world. We call it a miracle. We say, wow, look at that miracle. But in the part of the world where this was filmed, and this was filmed in mainland China, they do this all the time. And the effects last. They have a 95% success rate over 5 years of bladder cancers from using these kinds of techniques.
I saw that video of yours, and it was pretty profound to see that, you know, the video of the, it was like an ultrasound.
Well, the ultrasound allows us to see inside a woman's bladder and see a 3-inch diameter cancer that Western medical doctors have said is an inoperable cancer. So they said, you know, be happy and comfortable to the end of your days. And she said, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't know what she really said. She said, there's no way. I'm going to go find something else. And she went to an alternative clinic where they simply are employing quantum principles, but they're not calling it that. What they did was they created coherent emotions of feeling inside their bodies, the practitioners did, feeling the feeling as if the woman was fully enabled, fully capacitated, already healed. They didn't judge the cancer. They didn't say it's a bad thing or it's a good thing or that's right or wrong or that's got to go away. They simply felt the feeling as if she was already healed. And in doing that, they employed the quantum principles that say where we place our focus is what this field around us responds to.
You're a scientist. Now, did you believe that when you saw it, or did you go to the immediate skepticism of, well, then maybe they could have manipulated the ultrasound video?
Sure. It piqued my curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I said, of course, you know, you can, I think it's healthy to be skeptical. You can, with computer graphics, you can show anything, of course. And the reason that I'm certain about this, and I've seen other videos as well, but the reason I'm certain about this one is I know the gentleman that actually filmed it, and I had the opportunity to spend time with him. And we've seen this happen on more than one occasion. This particular instance was with one person in a clinic. I've been with Native Americans in northern New Mexico near our home who in the early 1990s were creating localized rain showers during the longest drought that had been recorded in 100 years. And we've seen global vigils coordinated through worldwide web where during the time, the 1 hour that people are feeling peace, all that can happen is peace. We've seen warplanes turn around when they were on their way into bombing runs in Iraq. And I document this in the book, in the Isaiah Effect is the title of the book, where the planes turn around in midair and they come back. They're recalled for reasons that no one can really explain. In the presence of peace, all that can happen is peace. And this is only one example. It's as different as these scenarios may appear from one another, the healing of a bladder cancer peace between nations, they are all linked through this field of energy. And the field is what empowers us to participate in our world rather than feeling helpless and powerless as we watch the largest nuclear arms build up since in the post-Cold War period, or as we see these threatening diseases on the horizon and everybody's waiting for them to hit America. What we know is that within each of us, we are given the power to change the chemistry of our bodies and to change the world around us. The experiments show it. Ancient traditions practice it. Ancient texts left the instructions. And what's so interesting, Lisa, is when you leave the Western culture, when you go into the little villages in the Andes Mountains of Bolivia and Peru, or we were in 12 monasteries and 2 nunneries in Tibet over 22 days, those people all know this stuff. It's like, it's the great secret.
They're just confused
everybody knows except us.
Westerners don't know this information, which is amazing because I do see that those, you know, countries are still experiencing survival and they do still experience war and strife.
Sure.
So if this does really work, again, my question is, what does it all mean?
Well, and the reason is because many of those countries now have chosen the same path that we have of a technological evolution. They're trying to be like us, and in doing so, they're turning their backs on the very traditions that have empowered them for hundreds or, in some cases, thousands of years. And I'm not saying that we turn our back on science. Again, I come from the world of science, and I support the scientific method.
And technical.
And technical. What I'm saying, Lisa, is we as a species on this planet are now facing the greatest challenges ever known in recorded human history, a number of them, and each of them threatens our survival as a species. And to me, it makes perfect sense to take the best of what we've known from our past. There's a knowledge there. And marry that with the best of what we now know in the present, in the knowledge of science, and weave that knowledge into a wisdom that is greater in its combined state than the science can be by itself, or that the spiritual or ancient knowledge can be by itself.
And well, I do agree with you because, sure. I mean, the part of the global warming and what we're facing with the ice caps melting and the sun is reflecting into the ocean, thus heating everything up. I mean, we are in a situation that we're creating these challenges, or we're facing these challenges more than we have ever faced before. I think it's time to try something new. If what we were doing before wasn't working, it's time to change.
And it comes right back, the first 10 minutes of this conversation. For 100 years, scientists have been trying to convince us that we're made out of quantum particles, and now that we can study these quantum particles, they are doing things that seem so bizarre to us. They appear to not be bound by the laws of physics that we subscribe to today on the one hand. On the other hand, we're made out of those particles. The only thing that separates us from those particles is our belief system, consciousness, the way we feel about who we are in the world. If those particles can be in two places at once, if they can travel in time, if they can heal themselves, if they can change from matter to energy, and ancient texts say that we've done that, the experiments are showing that we can do that, and I've seen individuals in documentation, and now you have as well, where these things happen, how much power do we really have to change our world? And the answer is, it appears we've got all the power we want for all the change that we need, and what has to happen is we've got to change the belief systems
in ourselves
that unleash that power, and that's what, you know, that's
we
what,
have to change who we're being, basically,
sure.
is what
we're,
you're saying.
We're redefining, again, the 21st century, we're redefining our relationship to the universe. Are we passive observers, or are we powerful creators, maybe afraid of our own power? And that's what many of
look at a lot of the, you know, the government and certain media that is keeping us in that place of fear and anxiety, and the news stories that throw us back into fear. I read one earlier at the top of the hour about the bird flu. I mean, it was almost laughable how much anxiety this. Please don't shake anybody's hands.
Well, sure. I mean, all you've got to do is watch the 6 o'clock news, or to get where I am today. We went through the airport system yesterday, and you've got the threat levels being reported every 20 minutes. But the one that gets me is they say report any suspicious-looking people. And if you've been through an airport any time in the last couple of years, everybody looks suspicious. You know, I'm surprised we're not reporting everybody. So, you know, it is. It's all about keeping that tension and that fear level all spun up. But the quantum principle is saying to us, Lisa, that this field mirrors back what it is that we're feeling individually and collectively in our families, our communities, and our nations. So if we are in that tense, frightened state 24/7, is it any wonder that we're seeing some of the most bizarre things happen in the world we've ever seen? And by the same token, we know what happens when we're in fear all the time. What if we try something different? And that's why I'm so passionate about what we're saying. I think this is an opportunity to redefine who we are and to do it together. And the condition of the world is pushing us to understand that so that we can survive our time in history.
It goes back to the Mahatma Gandhi phrase, be the change you want to see in the world.
It does.
It does have something to do with that in terms of a strong way. But how would this relate to, for instance, global warming? What could we really do about that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of controversy. We know it's happening. We know that there is a natural cycle here, Lisa, that is at work. And it appears that the way that we've lived our lives is very probably accelerating the cycle. We know that these magnetic cycles have happened, as we said in the beginning of the program, at least 14 times in the last 4.5 million years. So we're not going to stop those cycles. We're not going to necessarily change what's happening. We may change the way that we respond to what's happening.
I mean, it's going to intensify now the fact that there's 6.5 billion people on this planet.
We've never seen this cycle with that many people on the planet. We really don't know what this is going to mean. But what we do know is that we have an inner ability to not necessarily control or manipulate, but we affect the world around us, and we're part of that field that's changing. A lot of people feel like time is speeding up. I know I hear that all the time.
Oh, yes. I definitely wanted to talk to you about that. Yeah. We have to go to a break,
sure.
But I want to talk to you about the whole idea of, is time speeding up, and how is that affecting the heat levels in the core of our planet, too? And it feels like it is speeding up, but obviously, statistically, things are increasing in such a rapid rate in such a short amount of time. It really does appear that it's speeding up. But I also want to take listeners' calls when we come back. And I'm going to give you the phone numbers here. The west of the Rockies, it's 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. If you're a first-time caller, you can call us at 818-501-4721. And then the wild card line is 818-501-4109. When we come back, we are going to be taking your call, so if you have a burning question for Greg Braden, give us a call. And we need to find out a little bit more about that essence of time speeding up. So stick with us. We will be back with a Coast to Coast AM. I'm Lisa Garr, sitting in for Art Bell.